In the Ring with Eusebius Makaiser. Eusebius
Makaiser. I hope you've had a wonderful Easter weekend, and if you unfortunately have been directly or indirectly affected by the floods, the mudslides, the torrential rains, and just the absolute incredible human catastrophe in KwaZulu-Natal, my deepest condolences for any loss suffered in your family, and also if you've been injured or still have the pain of a loved one that has gone missing, I really do hope that you get some certainty and find some solace in these moments of incredible grief. In fact, the entire country is affected, at least economically, and of course, we have family across the country, and so chances are that many of you listening to my podcast are affected by what happened, and it really is an absolute horror. But we try and pick up the pieces. That's something that we're known for as South Africans, and there's so many issues that continue to be important that we need to chip away at as we continue to try and create a better society for ourselves to live in. In this edition of In the Ring with Eusebius Makaiser, I want to respond to various strands of criticism in response to an article of mine published on Good Friday, actually. If you missed it, you can find it in the blurb write-up of this episode, or you can simply Google, "I was taught God exists. That is a lie. Here's why." Eusebius Makaiser, or Eusebius and God, and it will jump out in the search results as an article that I had written. If you missed it, I'm going to summarize essentially what I had said. The question I'd asked was, if God exists, why didn't he or she or they prevent the hundreds of thousands of deaths that occurred in KwaZulu-Natal? Well over 400 and probably more by the time you listen to this episode. So hundreds of deaths in KwaZulu-Natal. And the hook was the natural disaster, the natural evil that had happened in KZN. But of course, the general argument that I was presenting in my article, for those of you who think critically about religion, is not new. In the literature, it's known as the problem of evil. And for donkey's years, there have been attempts to try and solve for the problem of evil if you are theistic. And those who are convinced that the problem cannot be solved have responded to attempts to, from the other side, attempts to make the problem go away. And the problem is essentially the following, that there are four statements which logically cannot exist in the same universe at the same time. And it's really important that you slow down and maybe even rewind what I'm about to say if you don't fully understand it. Or you might even think you understand it, but there's a nuance that many people miss. And if you've had the luxury of being exposed to formal logic or argumentation theory or philosophy of religion, as I have, if you've had that luxury as an accident or a feature of your formal education, then you will get the point quite immediately. But even if you are formally educated with a PhD behind you, there's something about a logical problem that isn't always very well grasped. And I've noticed that even people who are atheists and who are sympathetic to the argument that I presented don't quite grasp the nature of the argument. So I want to start there. The argument is known as an inconsistent tetrad. The English is unimportant. The idea is important. Inconsistent tetrads are four statements that cannot be true at the same time. Now, before we come back to the religion case, I want to try and help you understand what I mean by the unique logical nature of the problem by taking an easy example for you to understand. If I ask you, Joe Soap, draw me a square circle, would you be able to do so? No, you would not, because it's logically impossible. The very definition of a square makes it impossible for a square circle to exist. Therefore, my request is gibberish. When I ask you to draw a square circle, it is quite frankly as helpful and as meaningful as saying, Joe Soap, please draw me blah, 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 blah. You do not know what I'm asking because you can't make head or tail out of it. In fact, it's probably worse than gibberish. It is an impossibility. Let me take a less well-known example. Might be known to some of you who've done a bit of formal logic. And maybe there are obscure discussions about this deep in the academic literature. It's not important for the everyday conversation that I want to have with you. Can you imagine a world in which there is an unstoppable force and in the same world an immovable object? Well, no, you can't, because those two things in the same world is a logical impossibility. That's straightforwardly a logical impossibility as a result of the very definition of each one of those two things that I've described in that sentence. The definition of an immovable property is that there can't be an unstoppable force in the same world as it. The flip side is also true. If you have an unstoppable force, there can't be immovable objects. Otherwise, that force, by definition, is stoppable. So there's no universe in which you have both an unstoppable force and an immovable object. So that's what I mean by logical impossibility. And people don't quite grasp that. So we're going to come back to God in a second. And the reason it's important is that the challenge, the problem of evil, so-called, is not an empirical problem, which is what many critics of my article misunderstand. It is not even a theological problem, nor an interpretation or hermeneutical problem. And so people have written to me, analyzing Genesis, for example. And I go, oh my God, I wish many more people had sat through Marius Vermaak's semester-long course on logic in undergraduate at Rhodes University. That is probably, how's it, Marius, the single most useful university course that has set me up for life, for being able to think as clearly as possible. And when I don't, it's no fault of his, but my own human frailty surfacing and those lessons he taught me being dormant temporarily, because as human beings, we're not perfectly rational creatures, which is no excuse for misunderstanding the problem of evil. But so many people misunderstand the challenge. It's a logical challenge. It's not a theological challenge. It's not an interpretation challenge. It's not a hermeneutical challenge. It's not an empirical challenge, for that matter. And so talking to me about your favorite passage in the Bible is the first indication, when you respond to my article, that you've misunderstood the nature of the problem of evil. It's an inconsistent tetrad, which is a formal logical problem. Four statements that cannot simultaneously be true at the same time. The problem is so tight, so interesting, that we are, if you will, in the realm of the rigor of mathematics here, more than we are social science or the humanities or liberal arts. Okay? So that's background. Now let's get to what those statements are that cannot be true at the same time. Now remember, the empirical or other elements of each one of these statements is actually secondary. The key question is not so much what do you think about each one of these statements for now. The key question is, as a group of statements, can they be true simultaneously? And those statements are the following. Statement one, God is omnibenevolent. Or put differently, God is all good. Statement two, God is omniscient. Or put differently, God is all knowing. Statement three, God is omnipotent. Or put differently, God is all powerful. Statement four, preventable natural evil exists. Or actually, to be more precise, we can simply say natural evil exists. An example of that being floods that cause harm. And so that's our definition of evil in that sentence. Right? We're just defining it like that. Because we can. Don't get hung up on the language. We could easily make the fourth statement, if it will make you happy, a different statement and say the fourth statement is floods causing human suffering happen. Now here's the logical, formal problem. Those four statements as a group, and you can pause here and go back and re-listen to what I've said, if you are not sufficiently familiar with this kind of reasoning to keep up with my explanation. The cool thing about a podcast is you can listen again. Write every statement down and then try and ask yourself, do I understand what Eusebius means by this being a logical problem, like a logical puzzle? Because that's a very specific characterization of the nature of the problem. Those four statements cannot all be true at the same time. If they can be true at the same time, then you are implying that square circles can exist, and you are implying that you can create a world in which an unstoppable force and an immovable object can exist at the same time. That is how impossible it is for those four statements to be true at the same time. So, how does one respond to an inconsistent tetrad? The only way to quote-unquote solve the problem is literally to accept that one of the four statements in reality is false. So you've got to say, maybe God is not all-knowing. Or you've got to say, maybe God is not all-loving. Or you've got to say, maybe God is not all-powerful. If you want to hang on to those attributes and say, no, my God indeed is omniscient, omnipotent, and omnibenevolent, then the only other way, logically, and I keep coming back to this, it's a logical puzzle. The only other way you can logically dismantle the inconsistent tetrad is to tell me, Eusebius, there's no evil in the world. And in the literature, that's where most of the action has taken place. Interestingly, in a response to me, Professor Sarojini Nader from UWC, in a really beautiful piece entitled God, Grief, and Good Friday, a response to Eusebius MacIsaac, she doesn't use logical terminology, but effectively she denies that God is omnipotent, omniscient, and omnibenevolent all the time. And I don't think many Christians would agree with her. Because most Christians want to hold on to the idea that God always is perfectly loving, perfectly knowing, perfectly powerful. Her response is interesting because it actually accepts a concept of God that dismantles the fantasy of a God being perfect. And you'll hear me being in conversation with her on my other podcast, Eusebius on Times Live, a couple of days after this one has been recorded. But for many Christians who want to believe that their God is all-powerful, all-knowing, and all-loving, they want to respond to the problem of evil by working on that last statement that there's natural evil in the world and do some work on interpreting that in such a way that the four statements can hang together. Which brings me to dealing with some of the responses. Now, some people say, well, you know, God gives us free will, and that's why there's evil. That doesn't undermine the fact that God is all-powerful, all-knowing, and all-loving. But the problem with the free will defense is very simple. And this is well-trodden territory in philosophy of religion. Even if I thought God exists, and I don't think there's enough reason to believe that, but I'm being nice in this entire engagement by even imagining that a God exists. The God with bells and whistles, in other words, the one that is supposedly omniscient, omnipotent, and omnibenevolent, can't be defended against the problem of evil by appealing to free will for a very simple reason. Free will is what I must presumably have to be fully human as a result of the grace of this God with bells and whistles in my interactions in the world and with other human beings as a moral being. But why should a flood happen? Why should an earthquake happen? Why should babies unnecessarily die in the Ukraine? Why doesn't it stop one of the rockets landing in a house in Palestine, killing innocent people, if he's all-loving, if he's all-knowing, and therefore can predict when it will happen, and if he's all-powerful, and therefore has the ability to make that rocket land 3 kilometers further than where it actually lands? It doesn't make sense. You can give me free will and still prevent mass suffering. It is not compulsory that free will be given to human beings and mass suffering must happen. Because after all, suffering is not binary. It's not either no suffering or a lot of suffering. There are degrees. So there are 200 problems with the free will defense. I'm not going to give you all of them here because this is not some philosophy seminar, but I'll give you the obvious intuitive ones. Even if some evil will result from the trade-off that comes with giving us free will, why not ensure that you minimize the amount of suffering in the world so that you still preserve free will, but you don't have mass-scale suffering? The only God that will do that is a God that is imperfect or a God that is not quite as nice as you actually think that he is. Those are your only two choices, and that's why the free will defense doesn't get you very far. And then I've had people responding with arguments that are so poor, I'm not going to spend more than 2 minutes on them. Oh, well, our brains are too small and finite to understand God. Well, firstly, presumably your own brain is also finite and small. If your brain is finite and small, why are you the special individual in the human population that is sufficiently smart to know the limits on what I can understand about God? So you've got a logical problem there that you've created yourself. Because if your own brain has got that limitation, why are you sufficiently lucid in your understanding of how limited we all are collectively? Are you not part of the very same class that you're talking about? And if so, then on what basis are you shutting down a rational inquiry into God's existence? But more importantly, as I said at the beginning, This is a logical problem. It's an inconsistent tetrad. Even if our brains are finite and our IQs, and by the way, I'm not quite sure what that means, but whatever that means, the logical problem is a simple logical problem. Four propositions on the board that you can write right now that can't be true at the same time. You can't make that disappear by saying that human beings don't have IQs of 400 and that God has an IQ of 2000. Even if God has perfect rationality, God cannot create a square circle. God cannot create a universe in which there's an immovable object and an unstoppable force. God is limited by logical impossibility. Similarly, the inconsistent tetrad does not go away just because human beings have got imperfect brain capacities. And so appealing to limitations in our cognitive ability doesn't actually make the logical aspect of the inconsistent tetrad go away. So that also doesn't work. And then finally, there have been a whole bunch of arguments that have simply been not only personal attacks against me, but ironically enough, also spectacularly unchristian. Oh, he's gay. Oh, he's fat. Oh, he's just a liberal. Oh, that's offensive. None of those responses undermine any part of the logic of the challenge of the problem of evil.